everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Right to the Source. My name is Robin Harrison, and I'm here, as ever, with... What am I going to call you this week?
I got called a moron by someone in my office this morning, so...
Well, that's pretty fair.
Yeah.
With, well, why he just called himself.
You say my name?
Yeah. Mr. Ed Birkin.
Thank
moron,
you.
Moron, according to someone within his office.
Thank you for the slick introduction, Robin. Good to be back. It feels like we've been away for ages because we obviously skipped a week so that our coming of age could be in Las Vegas. I'm not sure if any of those podcasts are out, but we had some great recordings there.
We're going to have our 21st. Is going to be one of the people we spoke to in Vegas. I think we go big. I think we've gone big for that one. This is really weird because just before it goes out and we're talking about it as if it's in the past. So I feel like I'm bouncing between tenses. So we should probably stop talking about that.
Will this one go out before that one?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so you're going to spend a long time delaying this one. Anyway, yeah. News. So people are probably wondering why I am wearing a bobble hat inside.
Is it because your office is bitterly cold?
No, we have heating. It's breaking news. Won't be breaking news when by the time this comes out, but the Owls have formally been placed into administration, which is a good thing as far as I'm concerned, because I think it's the only way to get the owner out, have a reset. We'll get a point deduction, which means we'll get relegated and hopefully do like Derby County did a few years ago and kind of bounce back stronger.
Rebuild.
And, you know, the short-term pain is part of supporting a club, yeah?
Yeah, and your old manager has gone to a team in Glasgow.
Yeah, well, no one else wanted him. So
no.
Good tactician, but yeah, I think he let himself down with his behaviour at the club. But anyway, you know what? Let bygones be bygones and good luck to him.
That's very big of you. And his first game was last night. He was playing... I think the team that's third or fourth in the Norwegian league, and they lost.
I say bring back Big Al. Get Ali McCoist back up there.
Ali McCoist is one that, yeah, it's impossible not to like Ali McCoist.
It is impossible not to like.
Yeah.
Do you think we'll ever be viewed as like on Talk Sport in the morning, Ali McCoist and, his name, I love him. Oh. Do you ever listen to it?
I don't actually. Not for.
Oh my God, this is embarrassing. Never mind. Right. So. Yeah. Let's just quickly recap the sports then. So Wednesday in administration, I went on Saturday to watch them away at Charlton. That was terrible. We lost, left before the end, which I know some people disagree with, but hey. Then went to the NFL to watch the Jags. They were appalling, left before the end of that. There were actually three Americans behind me who left at the end of the first quarter. And
wow.
I'm jealous I didn't do that. Had a quick check on my new NHL team, the Oilers.
Yeah, the Edmonton Oilers.
Yep, they played Friday, Saturday, Sunday last weekend. Lost all three. So, I mean, this is going great.
You're not doing well at the moment, but I can share some of that pain. Celtic lost to Dundee for the first time since 1988, I think it was.
Classic.
It wasn't great. We did, however, redeem ourselves on Thursday night by beating Sturm Graz.
Well, look, we've covered soccer, we've covered ice hockey, we've covered NFL. What other major US sports have we not covered?
Well, why don't we talk about the NBA? We're just coming into the new season. And so
controversy.
We should have some kind of alarm or klaxon to set off when we say that. But so I've been in Barcelona the past 2 days for a Light and Wonder event, which was very good. Really, really great people. Really interesting to see what they're doing and talk to them about what they're doing next. But my phone yesterday started buzzing, and it didn't stop buzzing because the NBA, working with the FBI, has uncovered, has made a load of arrests linked to gambling. Now, I think it's important to say, in the case of some people like Chauncey Billups, obviously that wasn't to do with sports betting.
No, that was a poker ring, yeah?
Yeah, that was a poker ring.
So that was mafia poker ring. No, passport or not, same shit has happened. Yeah,
exactly.
So just forget
exactly,
that.
Exactly, yeah. So not connected to sports betting. Terry Rozier, however.
Of the Miami Heat. In case people don't know what happened, he came off injured after 9 minutes during a game and told people beforehand that he was going to come off early, and therefore they wagered, I think, about $200,000 on unders, like, you know, he's going to score you know, do fewer points for rebounds, etc. And they made, allegedly, FBI say, not me, tens of thousands of dollars from this, yeah. Which they went round to his house and kind of counted. Now, we don't know if this was, I don't know at the moment if this is with legal bookmakers, illegal bookmakers. I've just seen DraftKings and FanDuel were asked about it and condemned it. I don't know if any bets were placed on their sites or other ones. What I can say is what surprises me is a quick Google shows that Terry is paid $24 million a year. And he does something so stupid and illegal to make tens of thousands of dollars. I mean, these guys are morons, yeah? They are actually like, they honestly just think because they're good at basketball that they're not going to get caught at doing stupid shit like this. And it just does not make sense.
There's always going to be more nuance than that in these situations. Like, on the face of it, what a stupid thing to do. But you never know what other pressures may have affected this. And I think one of the interesting things that I think is going to come out of this is obviously not all these arrests are linked to legal regulated gambling. However, I think it is going to blow back on that legal regulated industry.
Yeah, I mean, we've had the MLB, you know, has had a scandal.
Yep.
You know, of course the NFL's going to have one at some point. You know, the NBA's had one. It's just, it's going to happen. And, you know, and then if they find out that it is on legal sites, then they'll probably be like, well, how did they get 200,000 on? You know, how is that not spotted? And we've had the Spanish data this week, which is part of it. And the Spanish regulator gives loads of data, which is great.
Yeah.
Someone like me is a bit geeky on it. But it kind of just shows, as we already knew, how weighted the gambling industry is towards the players who lose a lot. So they need, you know, they need to have these guys who are, you know, putting bets on. $200,000 seems like a lot, but you know what? If they spread it across books or people, there's more people involved.
Yeah.
They're putting a $10,000 bet on. If you start limiting that, that's just going to push it to the black markets. The legal industry, you know, it's not their fault at all. And who knows, maybe we'll find that actually worked well. And if it was on legal betting sites, that could be a good thing. If they then flagged it as suspicious activity and that's what did it. Whereas if it's on illegal sites, they're not going to flag that stuff as suspicious activity and these guys would have just got away with it. So actually, I kind of hope it was on the legal sites that these bets came through and they showed this is how it works and this is why legal betting is good for sports integrity. But it doesn't matter about that reality. The fact is there's going to be lots of media and shit like that that's just going to be, you know, we've allowed sports betting in the US.
Yeah.
Guess what? Yeah. It happened before PASPA. And, you know, now we've got scandals. And it's just press the industry doesn't need.
No. And I think really what's crucial is how the industry reacts. Because there are going to be people lining up to see how bad the industry is. And whether they're involved or not, there needs to be clear and consistent messaging.
And not being unfair, maybe it is unfair, I would hazard a guess that the industry's response to this will be suboptimal, messy, and should be better. If we're going by the industry's response to most things over the recent history.
Yeah, that is my worry. We really do not need this as an industry.
So speaking about messy things in the industry, why don't we just go on to something else controversial and, you know, say it how it is. Playtech Evolution.
Another thing... Yes. So another thing that I think the industry doesn't need.
Okay, let's play devil's advocate because you did it when you were going on about, you know, how virtuous, you know, illegal operators are for closing down their business and winding me up on that. So I'll just play the arsehole here. So Playtech have admitted they funded this report into Evolution. Mm-hmm. They're saying it's not a smear campaign. It's just they want to, you know, they accuse Evolution of doing some illegal underhand practices, etc. Mm-hmm. And they think that should be known. Now, I've seen most viewers like Playtech shouldn't be doing this shit. You know, they're not whiter than white themselves and it's all underhand and it's bad for the industry. Playtech have now doubled down and said, yeah, we did it, but we know we backed the report. Let's say these allegations, there is something to the allegations, which people obviously, some people believe there are, hence the Evolution share price over the period of time.
Yeah.
Is it wrong for Playtech to do that? Is it wrong for them to try and call it out? And then obviously they would want to hide it because otherwise, you know, they can just say, well, it's our competitor saying that. So I kind of get why they've hidden it. I'm not saying that any of this is right, but let's just look at the other side that people aren't talking about. What's wrong? If this is an industry you want cleaning up, with some bad practices, what's wrong with calling it out? Maybe Playtech are the hero in this one. by the way.
Well, that is controversial.
This is devil's advocate.
This is
let's just see that. You know?
All right, you can't keep up the pretense for the episode like I did.
But no, but you know, if they're calling out stuff that's wrong, then you know, okay, they benefit obviously as their main competitor. But
yeah, well,
allegedly, by the way, like, we're not saying Evolution have done any of this.
No, allegedly, it's all been
you know, interviews have been cut to make it sound wrong and all that stuff. So that's, and all of this is going to probably be aired, and which is going to be terrible for the industry in terms of all the dirty laundry being aired. Because either, let's get to the crux of it, either Evolution has been doing some really bad shit, yeah, or Playtech has effectively hired someone who has made up stuff accusing them of doing bad shit, and they haven't. Both of those scenarios look terrible on the industry. Or yeah, the third scenario.
Both of these are hypothetical scenarios, obviously.
Yeah, but there's two things. So Playtech have said, you know, done interviews and said that Evolution are doing this bad stuff. And Evolution have said, no, they have falsified this and deliberately misled to make it look like we're doing bad stuff, which we're not. So one of those two things is true. Yeah. Either they're doing bad stuff or it's been falsified. There's no good outcome. The worst outcome is it turns out that part of it's been falsified and they are doing bad stuff. And they're both bad. There's no good outcome out of this.
No, someone has really done
bad stuff. Yeah?
Yeah, someone has done bad stuff. I don't want to put allegations in on either side, but I think one of the things that this does highlight is there is a bit of a code of omerta around where people are operating. And by operating there, what that means. From the supply side, it is generally, we work with these companies, it's where the companies put it, it's therefore at the point of consumption. But this is changing. Like, we're seeing this. We're seeing a lot of talk about supplier licensing. And that is going to come with probity. If you think back to, you know, Senator Addabbo's bill for iGaming New York, there were some clauses in there that did put a lot of scrutiny on the suppliers. And
there's been talk for a while. Let's be honest, there's no scrutiny on suppliers yet. There's just not.
No, but it's something that could well be coming. And I think what this does, this situation, and can I just say, actually, you know, excellent work by Zach Thomasaku at Nix. You know, we followed this case from the start, and it's great to see someone with just apply that tenacity to it. You know, I think fair is fair, next door competitor, but I think great work on the reporting side. I've seen some criticism of how it was reported on social media, and I think that's unfair in the work that Zach did. And I will, you know, play, you know, as a journalist, yeah, I would have largely done the same.
You class yourself as a journalist? Interesting.
Barely.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, barely. Right. But what was I saying? I would say,
I don't know.
Oh, no. I'm just
still thinking about the fact that you said that both Evolution and Playtech have done terrible things, but no, that's fine. No,
we're talking hypotheticals.
Is the industry actually moving towards suppliers having more probability on them? I don't think it is.
No, like, I think ultimately, especially for that regulated kind of cohort of tier ones, like if you think back to the EGBA letter from last year about the illegal market, if you think about the messaging from the associations, from the operators, they are pushing hard against the black market activity.
It's sort of
the industry that is the bogeyman that they want to, well, the bogeyman and genuinely the threat to their businesses that they're trying to highlight to regulators. And I think with that messaging, let me finish, with that messaging, it's going to be impossible for suppliers not to be caught up in that.
I think that is mostly bullshit. And I will tell you why. Most suppliers, not all, but a large number of suppliers are supplying operators in regulated markets and also operators who are not licensed in those markets. And they can get hide behind aggregators and stuff like that, they're doing it. Now, if you really wanted to go all out, and someone's going to tell me, and I'm probably wrong here, someone's going to... if there's enough people listening, they'll tell me why this isn't reality. But let's say you're a Flutter, for instance, or Bet365 or other companies available, and you're in market. Then, as you could say, we are not accepting your games on our regulated site because if they continue to be seen on unregulated sites. Now, if everyone got together and did that, and he got rid of a game, then fine. But the fact is that what would probably happen is the others wouldn't, and therefore that person who's standing up to them would be at a significant disadvantage because they wouldn't have the same content as everyone else in the market. And that's why they're not, although they want to get rid of the legal market, they're not willing to do the hard stuff. So, you know, and that's how part of the, so the Netherlands illegal market, and we're getting on to the Netherlands at some point, you know, there's work done by the Dutch lottery and some of the suppliers were like showing data showing how much, you know, time and, you know, people were spending on illegal sites and playing their games. And it's like, okay, so they know their suppliers are actually supplying illegal operators, yet they continue to supply the legal market as well. That's not standing up to it. I mean, look at Evolution's, you know, latest release, Q3 last week, earlier this week. They put it there, they have 46% share of their revenue from regulated markets. Yeah. You know, okay, that's gone up from 39% in, you know, the same quarter last year, but still over half of their revenue is coming from non-regulated markets. Now, we're not here saying, well, if it's not regulated, what's right, what's wrong? But no. The supplier side, it is just, yeah, some people may believe those numbers, some people may not, but they're not going to have, they're not going to have lowballed it, are they? So I don't believe that we are getting closer at all. There's an idea that some of the US states were going to really kind of look at this and say, you know, you couldn't get in with unregulated revenue, but all the suppliers are doing. Evolution's the biggest supplier in the US. And they make less than half their revenue from regulated markets.
I think that's fair. Like, I think it is very difficult, but you see some attempts, like, for example, Tipico's preferred partners program. The idea is that you want to work with suppliers with probity. I mean, I think there needs to be an element of incentivization to get the suppliers to go over there. But equally, I can sympathize with the suppliers, similar to the operators, where operating in regulated markets is very difficult. It's very, very hard to make money these days. Because, I mean, you said to me, and I quote, if I was an operator starting out today, I wouldn't work in regulated markets. And so it's a good thing you're not an operator. But at the same time, the regulation is not acting as a facilitator. We've talked about it previously, how economic development arguments just do not work. The legal side, the regulators, the governments, they need to consider this. They need to consider the fact that regulated markets are seen as a blocker or, you know, a money pit rather than an opportunity. And I think that's really at the crux of this. This isn't just about the suppliers. It's not about a bun fight between two industry-leading suppliers. It's not just about the operators that are kind of straddling the kind of white and grey line, or even the ones that are fully in the black. The regulators also need to be part of this conversation.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, it's, you know, I only see regulation going one way, and that's going to be harder for regulated markets. You know, I don't think that's good. Look, if you're a supplier, again, if I was a supplier, you know, and I wanted to make money, short-term view, then yeah. And I wasn't listed on the stock exchange, again, I'd probably be going for, you know, offshore markets as well. But I don't think we can just say that makes it fine for these, you know, big corp. Look, if they've done stuff,
it's one thing
servicing non-regulated markets, and that's fine. You know, mm-hmm. That's clearly Evolution have said, you know, we do that because we have 54% of our revenues are non-regulated. That's fine. Shareholders know that. That's open and transparent. But it's another if any of this stuff that they've been accused of actually is true. Because there's one thing servicing non-locally regulated markets, which don't have local licensing, etc. And there's another doing some of the other stuff. And I don't think it's right to just say, well, you know, regulated markets aren't very profitable. So, you know, I kind of get why they do it. I get why they do it, but it doesn't mean it's right. So
no, it doesn't mean it's right.
If we go all the way back, someone is going to either Playtech's done something naughty, Evolution's done something naughty, or they've both done something naughty. There is no scenario where he comes out of this where it goes, no one's done anything wrong. And that's going to get aired. And a bit like the NBA, it's just more crap on the industry that it really doesn't need.
No. That's quite a sad thing, because this, I think, is a pretty good industry. It's always going to be a very emotive industry. And there are always going to be people that fall foul of it. But
Kindred just got fined £10 million for recent stuff in the UK. And like some of the stuff that like they were the gambling commission said they're doing is just basic stuff. It's the minimum you'd expect. And it's just shit like that. People just don't help themselves. Whether it's ignorance, greed, thinking they get away with it, they're an exception. Like, I agree, the industry doesn't need any of this bad press, but so much of it is bought on themselves. They deserve, like, some of these fines just completely deserved. Some of the being outed is deserved. And I think the industry is its own worst enemy. There you go, I've just isolated everyone in the industry. It's okay, cool. Right, quickly on Netherlands. I know you don't like to talk about the Netherlands because we always talk about it, but they had the H1 numbers out. And this is just great to have some data that shows this. Now, they increased the tax rate. And tax revenue fell. Now, it's not quite as simple as that because they did have the kind of deposit limits which came in, which also hampered the market. Yeah, but when you've got the tax rate going from 30.5 to 34.2% and tax revenue going from 237, falling 13% down to 205 million, you kind of go, okay, well, tax rate probably didn't help on that in terms of the market falling. And then they're going to increase it to 37.8% in January 2026.
Two brands also pulling out to the market in that.
And then the land-based guys have been more affected and some of the shops are closing. And it just, it's pretty much a blueprint for how not to regulate a market. But you know what? The way things are going in, I mean, Brazil, according to this great website, iGamingBusiness.com, it was reported that
What's it called?
Don't like to repeat it.
Okay, fair enough.
So, yeah, you guys wrote up about the 50% increase in tax in Brazil, not passing, but now they're looking to double the tax instead and advertising restrictions. And again, is Brazil just going to mirror Netherlands as a blueprint of regulating a market, going, there's lots of gambling happening and gambling advertising, we don't want this, and then just destroying it and pushing it all to the black market? I don't know.
I mean, it's the usual thing. It's not necessarily that there's more, it's that you see it
more visible, and it's the marketing and every operator, and I see why, because there's a massive bum fight from visibility, and you know, as we've seen in Brazil, that you have to really be a big operator to make it all work.
But the thing is as well, there is, yes, advertising is more visible, but before, generally, in the Netherlands especially, there was no above-the-line marketing before that. So you've gone from 0 to 100%, but that is starting off at a base of zero. So, yes, it's there, and people notice it because it's new. It's, I think the thing that is really frustrating these markets is the time scale for change has become so truncated. Used to be maybe a year or so post-regulation that people would start to kind of look inwards and assess. But then you think about somewhere like Sweden, that really kind of kicked this off of much quicker pushback against the industry.
Yeah. And you know what? It's tough. You talk about above-the-line marketing. So one thing we feel quite strongly about H2 is that one of the advantages, the only advantages a regulated operator has over an unregulated one, is its ability to advertise and then showcase that they are a regulated operator and kind of really be front of mind.
Yeah.
So that's why marketing, to a certain degree, not a free-for-all, is important for legal operators to have. But it brings you back to something that an old colleague of mine said when I was back in banking, who was in the leisure sector, you know, wasn't didn't cover gambling companies, but wasn't anti-gambling by any means. And he was just like, you know, he just didn't agree with the amount of gambling on UK TV around football advertising. And I get it, because he said, you know, I've got a 9-year-old son who, you know, watched a lot of Premier League football with. And is it right that he's constantly just being bombarded with gambling advertisements, like bookmakers? And at 9 years old, he could probably name 10 bookmakers off the top of his head just like that. And I get that. And you're going to go, you know, yeah, there's two sides to everything. And when you hear something like that, you know, he's not saying it should be banned, but he's just like, really, like, it's just being completely normalised. And look, maybe gambling should be normalised. You know, gambling is normal. It's being pushed a lot.
I think normalisation is an important thing, because normalisation means that people talk about something for its merits and its issues more openly. It's a bit cliche to make a comparison with advertising, but not advertising with alcohol, sorry, but if you look at the alcohol sector, a lot of that is normalised. Like, you know, going to the pub, even getting, let's face it, getting pissed. But then there are elements of it, such as when people might, you know, be over-consuming.
We don't really want to put it on advertising. I don't know the exact rules around advertising, but you don't
No, I'm not putting it on advertising, but I'm just...
You don't see Holsten Pilsner being... Who sponsored Spurs back in the day? That was a beer brand,
wasn't
it? That
was Holsten, yeah.
Yeah, I assume they're not allowed that anymore.
Not sure, actually. You don't see so many booze advertising. I mean, Celtic were sponsored by Carling...
Scotland is a bit different. I mean, you know, Tennent's, it's not surprising.
Well, it's not like we're sponsored by Buckfast, but, you know, Hibs quite recently were sponsored by White & Mackay, you know, the whiskey brand.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm not just talking about advertising here. I'm talking more broadly about normalising these, you know, inverted commas, sin industries, because there's still some taboos within these conversations. And I think that makes it more difficult to actually address some of the negative effects. And I remember, when was it? It was probably around, it was in the Brazil reports IGB did in partnership with Octo, talking to Alex from Fonseca from Superbet about gambling in Brazil. And he talked about he wanted to, you know, he saw a kind of responsibility of creating a legacy. And so, you know, obviously he kind of dug into that a bit in the conversation. And he was saying he wants a level of normalization where he can, like, talk frankly to his kids. It's like, you can do this and you can have fun, but you need to be careful about this. And the thing is, because those ill effects and talking about, like, the thing is, you know, if someone wins a bet, they'll talk about it. If they win, they won't kind of come in and say, oh, yeah, but stuck out £100 in this.
Very you don't hear about people's losses, you know.
No.
I think, but at the same time, like, if you look at Brazil, you look at a TV screen and there's like seven different, you know, brands being advertised during a football game, like at the same time. And it's just a lot. And I get why people are pushing back on it. But
I think
normalisation and people talking about losses and all that, I think that's a deeper thing we should probably need to spend
more
time on.
Part of the normalisation, and it's something that I think you are starting to see from the alcohol industry in the context of alcoholic beer, non-alcoholic beer even. So you see Heineken advertising it, you see Guinness advertising it. And
that is, I mean, look, okay. Look, sure.
Guinness Zero profit
is the most amazing advertising in the world, because they'll, like, the Six Nations, and they'll do all Guinness Zero.
Yeah.
It looks as though they're being really responsible advertising. And all they're doing is effectively advertising the Guinness brand. Yes, they're promoting their zero, but it's also promoting Guinness in general. So it's genius,
exactly.
And they get away
yes.
with not promoting. I mean, it's just, yeah. That is actually where advertisers of marketing agencies have made their money.
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, it works well. The fact that, because, you know, it's like, I mean, I'm sure I've probably mentioned it before, but, you know, I don't drink. I haven't drunk for 10 years or so. And when I first stopped drinking, it was very much like, you're not having a pint. You know, it was a weird thing for people. Mm. But now, like, sometimes I'd be in a pub and, you know, I'm getting three, you know, non-alcoholic drinks in a round. Draft as well, which is incredible, because it was always bloody cans or bottles. And that sort of thing, it's showing that people can engage with this thing, can be in that context, but there are kind of healthier or different ways of doing things. And I feel that's part of this normalization that you're seeing
sector. Everything you said is very interesting and true. I think we're going massively off topic. Well, I mean, you could equate that to saying, actually, people shouldn't bet. They should just do, like, social casino
But
by the way, I'm just going to also back up the drinks today. Guinness, drink of champions.
Oh, yeah. Well, Guinness Zero. Love it. But
off topic here.
No,
massively.
I don't think we have. But I think with you see attempts at it on TV advertising for gambling brands when they're talking about the limits. It was, I think it was for 888 a few years ago, like a how much is too much campaign. And it used very clever, like, you know, someone putting sugars in a tea and then putting an absolute shit ton of sugar in their tea. And I think people talk about the danger of gambling being normalised. But when something is normalized, it's much more comfortable for people to talk about. So this normalization that would actually help create a sustainable industry would actually help make people address problems when they arose, but would also differentiate overconsumption and irresponsible advertising from a more responsible approach. Don't get stuck in alcohol.
Yeah, but alcohol's normalised, yeah? Like, alcohol is normalised.
To an extent. I think there's still a lot around the ill effects of alcohol that is not normalised.
No, that's the thing. But people, if they have a problem, are still reticent to, you know, say, I have a problem with alcohol. But I don't think that's because it's not normalised. Just people just have an issue with doing it. Same with gambling. I think gambling is normal. Like, it's just everywhere. All the advertising, everything is normalised, but people still don't want to say they've got a problem because, you know, no, it doesn't matter what it is, being an addict at something,
I don't even think it comes down to addiction. I still think that gambling is treated slightly differently and viewed with a degree of suspicion in a way that alcohol is not.
Yeah, that's probably fair. So I quite enjoyed the Skybet advert a few years ago where it's like, you know, when the fun stop, and they're like, oh, you know, this little bit people put at the end of their adverts? Well, we want to make our advert this, you know, this should be the main bit. And that was quite clever because they're doing it. But anyway, I think that's about time, isn't it? We've been droning on. I mean, we had an unfiltered, relatively solid podcast. And then you've spent the last quarter of an hour talking about non-alcoholic beers.
About normalisation. I think it's actually quite an interesting parallel.
Yeah, but it's also just a bit deep and intellectual for our podcast.
All right. So what are we going to talk on a very superficial and chaotic level about next week?
Well, I mean, I quite enjoy the fact that there's just some, you know, interesting, controversial news that we could just, you know, talk shit about and give our view that other people perhaps wouldn't want to, who maybe care more about their jobs or listenership. So we can just ad lib it a bit more, but let's put in, I haven't got my laptop on it.
I want to get some data
generator. Yeah, no, yeah. Well, I gave you. Well, okay. Do you want some more data?
No, I want to do the random country generator. Yeah, we'll save the data for next week.
So
save the data.
Just on the Netherlands. It's fine.
Come on.
What have we got? So the KSA think that channelization has gone down to onshore down to 49%. From 51% in the last quarter of 2024. Ours is slightly higher. We think it's down from 56 to 54, but either way, it is a big offshore number. That's padded time, random country generator.
Yes. What are we talking about?
Well, first one that comes up is Madagascar, which I don't really have much data on, but I would just like to shout out, hell of a film. Do you not agree?
I can't say I've seen it.
You need to get your kid onto this stuff.
She's too young for this.
Bit young. I know, scary lions. Okay.
As does every child.
Mauritius. I think we've done Mauritius before, haven't we?
Yeah, we have.
I wish we can get away to... Oh, I mean, I've never heard of this one. Nauru in Oceania.
I mean, that's a very small country.
Population 10.
Yeah, let's look for a slightly bigger market.
Uganda. Have you done Uganda?
I don't think we have. We could talk about Uganda.
Capital?
Kampala.
Good knowledge. Population?
I'm always terrible at this. 16 million?
45.
See.
46. A currency?
Is it shillings, like Kenya?
Uganda shilling, yeah. National flower?
Begonia.
The Uganda flame tree, which I'm currently looking up.
The Uganda
tree. It is a flower, but it's pretty cool. Oh, no, there's a tree. Yeah, kind of is a tree as well. Definitely a tree.
Very impressive. I like that.
Yeah, it's nice. And then the national dish, which I've had to look up.
I don't want to pronounce it wrong. Matoke.
How the hell would you know that unless you're suddenly Googling stuff?
It's a kind of, it's like mashed up beans or something.
No, and now you're just getting it wrong. No, it's not actually.
Where is it?
They're kind of bananas, but they do look like when it says mashed up, it does look a bit, like. Matoke and green peas is something, but yeah, they mash it up. Staple food crop in Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania, and other Great Lakes countries. Hats off, you knew that. Yeah, you didn't know what was it you didn't know we were talking about? The dessert?
What dessert? Oh, a banoffee pie.
So you know about a type of banana that's a staple food crop in Uganda, Kenya, and Tanzania, but you don't know Bonofi by.
I watched it was on one of Anthony Bourdain's programs. I think it was actually Kenya or Tanzania he was in, but he mentioned that it was also the national dish of Uganda.
Okay, I play. Right, so Uganda, and then I suppose we better do a country as well, shouldn't we? A company.
Company, yeah.
Did I tell you, I met two more people told me to listen to the podcast. I think you need to work out how to get listenership numbers. I don't think we're as crap as, you know, as we think.
Well, we do have listenership numbers, and then we don't release them because we don't want people to know how much of an audience we have. I think we should just make it a thing. Whenever we bring up an industry figure, we just chuck in that they're a podcast listener, and we make it a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, but I think we don't. Isn't there something like? I mean, obviously, the next step is to get sponsors because no one's given me any free shit, and when I'm merchandising sponsors, but we're going to have to give some listenership data on that. There's going to have to be it's going to have some element of truth on it, right? Operator supplier. We should probably go on to operator, given suppliers we've kind of slacked off a bit.
So we do operator.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1 to 6?
5.
4, 1 to 12?
11.
11. Well, that's going to work, is it? Sportec kind of doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
October 23 came off the AIM.
Yeah. So let's go for, instead of that, 4 and 10.
Ah, topical. OPAP.
Interesting. Yeah, let's do that. Excellent. So we're going to talk about Uganda and OPAP next week.
And then by the time it comes out the week after, then people will be like, oh, great, someone's talking about the Orwin OPAP acquisition 4 weeks after it happened. Topical.
We picked it at random, and we'll talk more about the OPAP business, and we'll chuck in a bit about the Orwin stuff. But everyone, it's been an interesting one this week, so we hope you've enjoyed listening to it, and we hope that we've not offended anyone. This is a thank you everyone for listening to episode 22 of Right to the Source. So we very much enjoyed the discussion this week, and if we make it to next week, we'll be talking about Uganda and OPAP. So we'll see you then.